It is that time again for episode 2 of the Ira Kaufman podcast this week as we march now a month from training camp with the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the Baron of Big Storm Beer, the King of Pasco County, Uncle Ira, and Mr. Bill Curry Ford all rolled up into one. Sage, how are you today? What's going on?
This is going to be one heck of a podcast, Stephen. Word of the day, fabulous. And what do I mean by fabulous? I'm certainly not talking about the heat index of 104 at the Kemper. What I am talking about is I had the privilege of sharing a lunch table at the Glory Days in Pinellas Park with the fabulous sports babe. And not everybody that listens to this podcast is going to know who I'm talking about. Her name's Nancy Dinellen. And you guys know as well as anybody that, boy, about 20 years ago, she was on fire. She was making a ton of money. She's a radio host, sports talk, and she went to Seattle, took the place by storm. She had George Call. She had the Supersonics coming into her studio on a weekly basis. They'd never seen anybody like her. Of course, very rare for a female at that time to be in sports talk radio. Then ESPN hired her. She was simulcast on television. She was doing her show, and she was on television on ESPN at the same time. So it was great to see her, and she's doing well. Boy, if she ever writes her memoir, I'm going to be first in line to get that book because, boys, she's got stories. About her career.
I love you, man. That was so funny because she did write her memoir. It's a great book. I've read it. You should look it up on get it on Amazon. It's a great book.
Well, I want another memoir. I want one up to date. I want an updated memoir.
You know, she was at the top of the world in really 1995, 1997. Yeah. ESPN Club at Disney actually built a studio for her specifically in the middle of the club with sort of glass windows around it. It's an interesting story. Sage. And we'll talk about how you actually had you had lunch before you had lunch, which is a classic Ira move to completely stuff his face and then go to lunch. Beautiful.
I had a salad with the sports babe, but you know, a salad's not going to carry me, Steve. So we'll talk about it.
Absolutely. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. If you're new to the podcast, Lee D. Camper is here of Joe Bucks Fan, and we are fired up to be presented by Bill Curry Ford. BillCurryFord.com. That's where you start shopping right now. This weekend, the end of the month, the deals are flowing, the 0% financing offers, the extra $1,000 off new and leased vehicles. General Manager Sean Sullivan is always ready to help you. Bucks fans, this is a family-owned dealership for the last 60 years. The Curry family truly cares. Get anything you need at Bill Curry Ford. Nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. BillCurryFord.com. Ira, let's jump right into really something that's critical. I tweeted about this early in the week, and a lot of people really didn't even know it, and now everybody knows it because Shaq Barrett was on NFL Network the other night and on Total Access, and he said he's kind of 50-50 on whether he's going to sign his franchise tag, but Friday is some sort of benchmark day. We don't know why. I'm going to just assume that maybe he's got a meeting with Rosenhaus and Jason Light and Bruce Arians. But what's interesting here, Ira, is that if he doesn't sign the tag by July 15th, then, or if he doesn't sign it by July 15th, then he can't negotiate a long-term deal off the tag. That's the hard deadline to negotiate a long-term deal. And maybe they're doing that now, we don't know, but he's only got a few weeks left here. What's going on?
Well, the first thing we have to say unequivocally, and let's say it unequivocally, Shaq Barrett's going to be a Buccaneer in 2020. I don't care whether he signs that tag or not. And frankly, I think that's all Buck fans care about. He ain't going to sit out the season. Not a chance. He's not throwing away $15 million and 1 year of his playing career. And Drew Rosenhaus is not about to suggest that to his client. Are they working on a long-term agreement? I think the Bucks have handled this well. I think the Bucks have done the right thing. Show me again that you're not a one-year wonder. This man does not have a body of work. And I don't think it's through fault of his own. I don't think Denver realized what they had on their hands. They made him a part-time player. He was a third down specialist, and they kept drafting, you know, the Bradley Chubbs of the world. and the kid out of FSU in the second round, another defensive tackle, supposed to be a pass rusher. Meanwhile, I had Shaq Barrett the whole time, and they didn't know what they had. So do it again, and you're going to get your long-term extension. He's very motivated to play in 2020. If he gets 12 or 14 sacks, nobody's talking about 19 and a half. Nobody. But if he gets double-digit sacks, the Bucs don't want him going anywhere. Nowhere. And if he doesn't, he's really going to hurt his market value. So, Steve, I think the first thing we got to do is quell any apprehension of Buck fans of that. If he doesn't sign, there's a chance he's not going to be a Buck in 2020. You know, we'll see what happens on Friday. It's not ominous. I don't think anything's going to happen on Friday other than, Lee, he's going to be a Buck this fall, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, I doubt that he's going to toss away $15 million. I don't know why he would do that. Le'Veon Bell's is a nitwit, and that's all there is to it. I know people say, well, Le'Veon Bell did it. Well, with Shaq, here's the thing that people overlook. You're not going to get that year back physically that you threw away. You never get that back. Again, $15 million.
I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but it's worth noting that what Lee just mentioned, you're never going to get that year back. Steve, with all the hundreds of players in the NFL, all of them, nobody would be more impacted in a negative sense if the NFL season does not get off in 2020 more than Tom Brady. Tom Brady would be the number one football player affected, and I dare suggest, Steve, that if the season's canceled, which I don't think it will be, but if it is and if this thing gets worse and it's canceled, I don't think it's crazy that Brady would retire at that point, rather than wait another full year. So when you talk about somebody throwing away a season, you start with Tom Brady, Steve.
Ira, I think you've lost your mind. Tom Brady's going to retire because they gave him a year off? He'd come back double invigorated. Are you kidding me?
And double force, as in 44 years old.
He signed a two-year guaranteed contract anyway. He's coming back regardless unless he gets beat to crap or loses it. Why would he skip town after he got a year off to just sit in his Tampa place and go jet skiing with Giselle?
Well, he doesn't want to do that. He wants to play football. He doesn't want to do that. He could have done that. I'm just saying, I think the season's going to be played, but if it's not, I think Brady would be affected more than any other player. That's all I'm saying.
All right, I got to smack you around a little bit.
I understood.
Deal with this. Now, Shaq, Ira, Lee, do you guys think there's a chance that Shaq simply says, you know what, if they're not going to offer me a long-term deal, then I'm just going to skip training camp. Preseason's a joke anyway, especially this year. Why should I risk getting injured? And I'll just walk in a week before I'm supposed to play. I'll stay in shape. Heck, Shaq just watched JPP walk in the middle of the season and rack up a bunch of sacks and not miss a beat. And that guy broke his neck.
I fully expect that to be the case. Shaq's going to say, hey, I obviously know the defense. You saw what I did last year. I'm just going to stay at home and rest myself. And I'll still have gas in the tank when January comes, when we're playing playoff football. I really do expect that. It would not shock me whatsoever if Shaq blew off. Well, I shouldn't even say blew off. But you know what? If I can't get a deal, I'm not coming to training camp. I'll see you in September.
I think that'd be a colossal mistake.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that, but if I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say 95%, because look who his agent is. I'd say there's 95% chance he sits out all of training camp. I'm not saying that's a smart idea. I'm not saying I would do it. But, I can see Shaq's side. Hey, if I blow out a knee in training camp, well, I'm probably going to lose, $10, $15, $20 million down the road. I'm just going to sit at home and protect myself. I'll be ready to go when the bell rings.
Steve, if the goal is a long-term extension, which is the goal for Shaq Barrett, whether it's with the Bucs or another franchise, if that's the goal, I think, in the words of Raheem Morris, you put your best self out there. And how do you put your best self? You hit the season running after a nice training camp. You can't be worried about getting hurt. You're playing football. You're going to get nicked up. Give yourself the best chance, Steve, to get 12 or 14 sacks and get yourself a long-term extension that way. I think that would be a foolish move for Shaq. But, Steve, you're not saying it's the right move. You're saying that could happen.
You know what? If I were Shaq's brother, I would say, Shaq, screw training camp. You don't need it. You don't need to risk coronavirus. You don't need to risk a high ankle sprain, because all that stuff is going to hurt your money down the road. I would tell him to, you know, show up August 20th. That's what I would tell him.
Steve, you absolutely hit the $30,000 question, $100,000 or $15 million, whatever price tag you put on it. The coronavirus. Shaq probably has a better chance of testing positive with the coronavirus than he does getting hurt. You hit the nail on the head. The coronavirus. That, you know what? We got to get used to it, because that's going to be lurking in the background for this entire season, whether it's training camp or practices, preseason games. That's going to be, like I said, lurking in the shadows until the Super Bowl has been played. So we all, as football fans, we have to realize that. And that's going to affect a lot of things, including if a guy possibly sits out of training camp.
Well, we also have to remember that Ezekiel Elliott, now I'm not trying to suggest he had a bad year, but he did not have a Ezekiel Elliott season. He did not. And believe me, I know, because I drafted him in the first round of Todd Wright's fantasy draft, and I thought I stole him at number six. And he had a very good season, but we're talking about, you know, possibly the best running back in football. And I think it hurt him. I think it hurt him, especially early in the year. As the season went on, he got better and better and regained his old form. So, you know, some people don't think you need training camp. You mentioned JPP. Guys, he's a freak of nature. He's proven that. He is a freak of nature. There's not many guys like that. So I think, you know, it's a little bit of a stretch to suggest that Shaq Barrett does not need a training camp to have a big, big season. And that's the only way he's going to cash in, a big, big season.
I got you, Ira. It's all about measuring risk. You know, JPP is the classic example. He would not sign his franchise tag with the New York Giants, and then he blew his hand off. And they were like, oh, we're taking the tag back. Sorry, you're down to two fingers. Anything can happen. So there's that benefit to, hey, Shaq, if you sign it, you get your money locked up. But it wouldn't surprise me if he sits out a little bit. Who knows what'll happen? Sage had to run that past you, since Shaq might think he's a freak of nature after getting 19 and a half sacks. So who knows what's going through his mind.
Steve, I'd be a little surprised if the Friday announcement is a long-term extension with the Bucks. I'd be a little surprised if that happened.
Yeah, there's no guarantee of an announcement. Shaq just mentioned Friday as a cryptic benchmark. So who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows what that means? All right, now let's go to a media issue, Ira, because it's getting out of hand. I wrote about this the other day, talked about this with Lee. It's out of hand here. I don't know what else to say. But we need your sage wisdom so we all understand this. Now, Tom Brady continues to have these workouts at Berkeley Prep, the kindergarten through 12th grade elite private school on the west side of Tampa. And they're not open to the public. You can't drive through there. There's security. It's a separate field, and so he's not out at some park drawing fans and creating some sort of coronavirus melee or something. But the NFLPA said no more of these workouts based on our recommendations to our doctor. We don't want players independently working out with each other. It's just a recommendation. It's not some sort of government mandate. Last right. I checked, the NFL Players Union, you know, it doesn't have some sort of a grand national standing. And yet here we are, we've got Jenna Lane, Buccaneers beat reporter. She goes on ESPN television, national TV, and she's taking shots at the Tampa Bay area, saying residents collectively, you know, have issues following instructions with wearing masks, and that Brady doing this is bad optics, and Mike Florio's going bananas on ProFootballTalk.com saying Brady's flaunting it, and that he's, you know, being irresponsible. And of course today, Brady capped that off by going to his Instagram account, putting up more pictures of him working out, saying the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. What's going on here, Ira?
Well, Steve, I think the overview that you have to say is that these are grown men making their own decisions. I mean, you don't have to agree with it. They're certainly aware of any potential risks. So you can't say they're ignorant. I mean, we've been living with this thing for 4 months now. So you know, they're getting on that field, and they know what they're dealing with, and they're making their own decision. I understand why Buck fans would applaud this from a football perspective. It shows Brady's commitment. It shows part of what has made Brady the greatest quarterback of his generation. This kind of trust with his teammates and commitment to excel and determination and drive. So on the one hand, I applaud it. But Lee, I'll say this: bravo, and let's hope nobody comes down with this that's in that huddle, because then all hell could break loose, you know, on the brink of training camp. But Lee, these are grown men making their own decisions. It's tough for me to come down on them.
I don't know how. Yeah, I agree with you, Ira. And at the risk of sounding like an a-hole here, what law is Brady breaking? I mean, if this was really serious, you think the school wouldn't put a kibosh on him?
That's another good point, too.
Now, I don't live in Hillsborough County, so correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're outside, do you have to wear one of these Antifa masks?
No.
Well, they're outside. I don't see the big controversy here. I mean, I know that, and Jenna's not the only person to bring it up.
I guess the NFLPA would say they're not practicing social distancing. I think that's what they would say. And if you don't practice it, then you should wear a mask, whether you're outside or not. That's the NFLPA, Steve. That's not the state of Florida. Look, Brady's going to do what Brady wants to do. He's got a one-track mind right now. And you know what that is? Put
Giselle.
Another ring on his finger.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Put another ring on his finger. That's all he's thinking about. And if his wife put her foot down and said, absolutely not, he probably wouldn't be out there. So,
good point.
You know, These are grown ass men. Mike Evans is a grown man. He knows what's going on.
Ira, what do you think about this? Jeff Schwartz, he bounced around the NFL for about a half dozen years, offensive lineman, and he dabbles with SiriusXM NFL radio. He writes for various websites, and he came out on Twitter the other day and he said, what the NFLPA is asking their membership to do as far as not to practice with any other teammates, he said it's absolutely unreasonable. He says, if you're a bubble player, does the NFLPA actually believe that a bubble player is going to shut it down and risk getting cut and be unemployed for a year or two? And I thought that was very interesting. And
Steve, there's a lot of factors at work at the same time. It's complicated. Brady has made his stand. I'm not saying he's imposing his will on other Buck players. He's not mandating it. If Chris Godwin doesn't show up, he's not going to hold it against Chris Godwin. He's not, but it's another example of the sway that Tom Brady has.
Ira, I got to say, about a dozen days ago or so, I penetrated the walls of Berkeley Prep as a dogged reporter got inside the facility.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, jeez.
And while I did not catch Brady and the boys there, I did get a full dose of everything that's going on there and talk to some people. And the irony of this all, which drives me nuts because I saw it with my own two eyeballs, is there's Brady having practice on a field, and when he's done, that exact same field is used for camp that's going on there. Next to it is a bunch of kids at a tennis camp. They've got indoor basketball camp going on there. They've got coaches breathing on each other, everybody doing all kinds of things, and it's an active and vibrant summer camp environment. Yet nobody seems to care about that. They care about the 12 guys who are kind of spread out and who are grown adults, but they've got, you know, all these counselors and kids, and they're not wearing masks on those fields, and nor are they supposed to. And so it's just kind of ironic that, oh, it's a big deal, but it meanwhile, Brady leaves and hundreds of kids pour in doing all kinds of sports.
Stevie, that's one of the reasons we love you, Stevie. One of the reasons. Your eternal quest for to sniff out hypocrisy. You're outstanding at it, Isbitz. You find it in every crevice, whether it's in the media, and boy, do you find it in the media, or franchises or sports leagues, and you're very good at it, Steve, and you know what? You just did it again.
All right, Sage. I appreciate the love, but what I love even more is Big Storm Beer. The Bromosa is just the ultimate summer beer, even though I'm sure it's great year-round. I don't even know what to say, Ira. Bromosa, B-R-O-M-O-S-A, from Big Storm. It's available at their tap rooms in Odessa and Clearwater, but it's in the stores. You can go to the Storm Tracker on our website or on their website, bigstormbrewery.com, and look to see where you can find Big Storm beer in your neighborhood, and then you can call, see if they have the Bromosa, but it's one of the core beers. Fantastic. I know you're a fan, Ira, and you like the Tropic Pressure Florida Ale, but gosh, Big Storm beer really knocked it out of the park with this Bromosa.
You know, Steve, Big Storm's got two great locations, Odessa and Clearwater. Of course, we're going to use the Clearwater location for our buck parties. But, Steve, there's a third way you can sample Big Storm, and I did it today at Bill Curry Ford in their showroom, and Big Storm did a fantastic job putting this thing together. They've got a food and beverage service right in the showroom. Lee's been on my case about this Americano coffee. I'm a coffee drinker. I went in there today. I ordered it. They whipped it up. I gulped it down in about, 82 seconds. Sean Sullivan, the general manager, was watching me and said, you want another one, Ira? It was outstanding. Then I was meeting somebody for lunch, Steve, and I still ordered a Cuban, a pressed Cuban, to go. And I walk out to the service department where I was getting an oil change, and in one hand, and they gave me a, Lee, what is it, a cafe con leche or something? I think that's what it is. And Sean Sullivan said, you got to try this. On one hand, I got that. In the other hand, I got the Cuban, and I'm walking to the service department. I should have taken a picture, Steve.
Ira, what's the over-under on how long that sandwich lived in your hand before it shoveled into your face?
Well, I was going to save it for dinner, but while I was waiting for the car to be serviced, I opened it up and took two huge gulps out of it. and washed it down with a little water. I couldn't resist, Steve. I couldn't resist. You know how I feel about the Reuben, but the Cuban's coming on strong. It's giving the Reuben a run for its money, Steve.
All right, bigstormbrewery.com. Of course, Ira was referring to his watch parties at Big Storm Tap Rooms this year. Of course, Big Storm delivers. So they'll bring you beer. They'll bring you food. bigstormbrewery.com. Very easy to order online. Ira, speaking of going to games and games themselves, Lee wrote it up this morning at joebucksfan.com. You know, the NFL, it appears, is given the go-ahead to allow teams to basically block off the first eight rows of every section in the lower bowl and use that for tarps or, honestly, possibly computer-generated advertising that would cover the fans in the stands and knock them out of those seats so they can sell sponsorships that would be visible on television. And what do you make of that?
Well, I mean, two words take care of the whole thing. Lee, revenue streams. Revenue streams. In this case, it might be a revenue geyser. Look, even if they open the stands up to the public, they're not going to put 60,000 people in. They're not. Unless we get a vaccine in the next 5 weeks. And maybe even not if that happens. So teams are going to lose. Now, look, I'm not crying the blues for these franchises. You can't lose money in the NFL. That's why these owners don't want to sell. Let's take Tampa, for example, guys. You don't think Eddie DeBartolo would like to snap up the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? He's been reinstated by the National Football League. We got the letters from Roger Goodell saying as much. Tampa's his adopted town, former owner of the 49ers. He's in the Hall of Fame as an owner. He certainly got a keen eye looking at the Buccaneers and right here in his second hometown. Of course he wants it, but the Glazers say it's not for sale. Teams want Manchester United. Glazers say it's not for sale. These are money-making machines, gentlemen, so I don't want anybody to think that I'm crying for the owners here. But you lose parking, you lose concessions, you lose merchandising sales, and you take a little bit of a hit, Lee. You're still getting your TV money, which, guys, let's not kid ourselves. That's the reason there will be a 2020 NFL season. That's the reason. You're not giving up those billions of dollars from the network. That's understood. So, Lee, revenue streams, you do what you can to try to get back a portion of what you think you're going to lose. But don't let anybody think that the owners of the 32 NFL franchises are hurting. They're going to take a little bit of a hit this fall, but going forward, they're on firm footing, my friend.
They're not, you know, you're not going to see these guys in line to apply for welfare. So they're going to be doing okay. What the immediate issue is the salary cap going down, which 5 months ago was just unheard of. Just the idea that the salary cap would go down, people would think, yeah, you need to put the whiskey bottle away. Because the salary cap is based on revenue. And I can't ever remember the NFL's revenue going down. And that would be a first because, you know, teams are projecting no fans. Or at least if there's fans, social distancing, which cuts the seating capacity down by, what, 60% ballpark figure? But yep. These could be very lucrative. Ben Fisher of Sports Business Journal, he broke this late Wednesday night. And today being Thursday, the NFL approved this thing that they'll put tarps over the first eight rows of stadiums and teams can put sponsorships there. The reason why that's so important, it's basically like if you watch a baseball game, behind home plate, they have advertising, which is mega money. Same concept here. Those first eight rows, that's going to be on the TV screen. So if, let's say, your Southern Ford dealers want to buy a sponsorship, that's going to be on TV every game. Or at least every home game. So, and probably multiple times. The best example I can give, remember when the Giants and Ravens played the Super Bowl at the Denver Depression?
Yeah.
And the Tampa Tribune was still alive and well, and they had signage up on the, up on where the Ring of Honor is right now? There were so many punts in that game, every punt you saw Tampa Tribune.
You're absolutely right. Hey, Steve, a quick point on one thing Lee just mentioned in passing about the potential revenue shortfalls for 2020. I read a good article. You know, I'm not sure this guy wrote it, but he probably could have wrote it. Was this guy Andrew Brandt? I believe he used to be with the Packers as a financial guy. He's a very sharp guy, and he writes a lot about economic issues. And the guy is unbiased. You know, he's right down the middle. And I'm not sure it was him, but I did read an article that said, Steve, one of the ways that the league can try to ameliorate, lessen the impact of a potential revenue shortfall is to space it out, Steve, over 3 years. In other words, you don't want to go from $200 million to $150 million. Now you're talking about the Levante Davids that are on the bubble, certainly, guys like that. And you don't want that. So maybe you space out, the $50 million over 3 years and you don't have as much chaos, Steve. I think that's the direction the league would go in that regard.
Yeah, the number one thing is the players don't want the salary cap to fall, right? They have much more at stake than the owners. So
yes.
The chatter is that the players' union would just have to agree to borrow against future earnings, and then they'll keep the cap static. They'll keep it the same for 5 years as they, you know, make up the cash. If it goes to 6 years, fine, and then they go from there. So, but of course, all of these teams, and this is, I think, big part of what Lee's getting at, all of these teams build in to their team planning future salary cap increases. So even if it stays static, if they were planning on a 12%, the cap will go up $12 million at least. You know, that's wiped out. What I wanted to say about the sponsors, I was actually talking to somebody in the know about this. I got a few people out there, Ira. You're not the only one. Here's the thing with the in-stadium sponsorships. Right now, those companies, Lee mentioned, like the old Tampa Tribune sign up there or whatever's in the stadium, right? If I paid all this money to have a big in-stadium sponsorship and now there are no fans, I want my money back.
Bingo.
And the making available those first eight rows for signage that would appear on television, that's a way to shift those guys and say, look, we can't give you this year because we don't have fans. But we'll give you the whole section, whatever, up between the 20 and 40 yard line. So it's a way to sort of save that money so it doesn't fly out the door. It's not necessarily a new revenue stream, but it could become that.
May I suggest, gentlemen, that we drape a banner over the southeast corner saying, listen to the Sage twice a week on the podcast. Lee, it could be a little pricey, but, you know, we're reasonable men. We're reasonable.
Yeah, that's what made me think of it, Ira, because I brought that up to somebody. I said, well, what's it going to cost for me to get Joe Bucks fan on the television for you know, 90
and
million
viewers?
And they
said, viewers. You don't want to know, right, Steve? You don't want to know.
Well, you always got to ask, Ira. All right, now listen, Ira, I'm going to spell this out for you. Florida's Elite Restoration. Florida's Elite Restoration. You can just put that into your computer browser, Ira. I know you're technically skilled, and put .com on the end, and you're going to learn about Florida's number one mold remediation company, which is local here in the Bay Area. If you got mold, you have to call these guys 24/7. They'll come out free to inspect, see what's really there, and help you to make sure that you get your money that you deserve from insurance, and they'll help manage everything. But it's completely free. Florida's Elite Restoration, mold remediation specialist. This is the time of year for mold, Ira. You get a leak, you blow it off, you clean up. Next thing you know, 3 weeks later, you're smelling something or you're coughing, and you got to get mold. You got to attack it, kind of like Shaq Barrett has to get after quarterbacks. So you use Florida's Elite Restoration. You know Josh over there. You know they're committed.
Nice sit down with Josh at the Big Storm Brewery. Great guy. Loves his Bucks. Very familiar with this team and the franchise, and he'll get the job done, Steve. And it's an important issue that you just cannot put off. Otherwise, you're looking at crippling costs.
Yeah, that's the key. Don't put it off. Call Florida's Elite Restoration. They'll help you on the phone even, and then decide if it makes sense to come out and use their thermal imaging cameras and all the stuff that they do to see what your situation is. Florida's Elite Restoration. Now, I can't wait to ask you about this, Ira. I just can't wait.
Does that have something to do with Charlize Theron? No. All right. That's okay.
All right, Ira, look. So I'm watching YouTube, and all of a sudden, I come across Tom House on GQ Sports. And he's the really unique guy, you know, the former Red Sox pitcher who turned into a guru of mechanics for pitching, but also for quarterback play. And he basically broke down in a 15-minute fascinating interview, 15 minutes, of how he coaches Tom Brady and Drew Brees. He actually lives next door to Brees on the same street or something like that, so he's been training him in person. But he breaks down how he's in constant contact with Brady, and Brady right now is taking film of these practice sessions, sending it to House, and House shoots some text, say, you know, here's these 20 throws, take a look, let me know what you see, we'll talk, we'll break it down. And House detailed this entire thing of how he has a kinetic sequencing for Brady, and he goes through all these things, and he also explained in the video how athletes change after 35 years old and how he's working on Drew Brees now to play tennis because he's trying to tap into Brees' core youth muscle memory as a youth tennis player. And Brees is taking all these serves to work on his and strengthen his football throwing motion. And he went into all this stuff, and Brady is like a total devotee. I watched this whole thing, and I'm like, you know what? Clyde Christensen has the easiest freaking job in America this year.
Well, Lee, when you boast Brady and Brees among your clients, you're doing something right, Lee. Now, I think it's very fascinating. Wasn't he with the Braves, House? I don't know. I thought Tom House was with the Braves, but
I think he's got a connection with Nolan Ryan, too.
I think it's fascinating how... Look, as far as I know, House doesn't have a big backdrop in football, and the guy's working with two first-ballot Hall of Famers. With all due respect to Chris Sims, the number 15 and 16 quarterbacks in the National Football League, according to that knucklehead. But House is getting video of Brady's mechanics, Steve, from Berkeley Prep, sent to him on a weekly basis. I mean, this is absolutely fascinating. And you're right. House is now known as a guru. I don't know if it's too late for Jameis Winston to start working with him, but if I'm Winston's agent, I'm on the phone yesterday.
By the way, Tom House, you're absolutely right, Ira. He pitched for the Braves when they were god-awful in the early 70s. He pitched 6 years with the Braves. Yeah, Ira, that's why we have you on here. You're the sage. Not just the Tampa Bay sports, but sports.
And to boot, I don't remember Tom House being anything more than mediocre. How do you like that?
He was mediocre, but I do know that pitching coaches generally aren't your all-stars. I mean, for every Bob Gibson ever, the pitching coach, you had, you know, eight Tom Houses or three or four Dave Duncans. Dave Duncan was a catcher. And that's, I think I got him mixed up with House as well. I think Duncan caught Nolan Ryan, one or two of Nolan Ryan's games with the Angels. No hitters, I should say. House, back when a 3 ERA was an all-star, and he had like 530, 454. The ERAs back in the 70s, when you hit that kind of ERA, you're screaming double A.
You're right. Hey, Steve, by the way, Steve, I've been receiving serves in tennis for the last 40 years. That don't mean I can throw a 25-yard laser to the right sideline, by the way. Let's get that out there.
Ira, I've seen you serve, and there's no rocket coming off there. You get it in, though. You get it in. All right. Now, but listen.
Ira, why don't you remind him what you did do him on the tennis court?
Well, Steve and I, you know, he wants a rematch, Lee, and when he does want it, I want you to film it, Lee.
Well, to be fair, I did get a rematch, and that didn't go too well either. So one of these days, I'm waiting till you turn 75. I figure I can school you by
now. I got a torn hip labrum, Steve. You shouldn't be mopping me up out there. It's torn.
But in all seriousness, Ira, this guy Tom House, not only has he worked with a lot of pitchers and quarterbacks, he was the guy when everybody was wondering if Andrew Luck would ever play again. He's the guy who was saying, no, Andrew Luck, you don't need to throw a football. You just need to throw this little metal ball and this 1 pound ball. And if you can throw it X amount of feet, then it's in proper whatever. It's going to equal how many yards you can throw it. And don't listen to anybody else. Just throw this tennis ball like thing. And look what happened. Andrew Luck came back and was dominant.
Steve, what can you say about Brady and Brees? I mean, you know, they're charting a new course in terms of greatness and longevity. Hats off to Tom House.
I thought it was interesting, Ira, to finish up the Tom House. One, he said he expected to be coming to Tampa. So I thought that was interesting.
Oh, we got to get him on the podcast, Steven. That's number one.
And the guy's 73 years old. He's been holed up with coronavirus, but he's still working all Zoom stuff with Brady. And he also said that after they signed Gronkowski, Brady texted him and said, football's fun again. And he really believes that the fun factor is critical, and he had some sort of, it wasn't necessarily a football spirituality, but he talked about it. And I don't know, what do you make of Brady sending his buddy football's fun again?
I think there's something to that. Something happened between Brady and Belichick. I'm not sure exactly when it happened. It could have been the middle of the 2018 season. Could have been the start of last season. Something happened, Lee. And the relationship, which was fraying, reached kind of a critical mass where it looked like Brady wasn't having any fun. Now, part of it is that New England wasn't quite the team they had been in the past. I mean, they won 2 straight Super Bowls, Lee. And then last year, knocked out right off the bat, that terrible loss to Miami. That never happens to a New England team. Never. And when they could have been had a first round bye, Lee, I mean, they were fully motivated going to, play a Dolphin team that had nothing to play for. So that never happens. I think there's something to be said for it. Lee, he's reinvigorated. And I know that you've cast some doubt on, the importance of these mental outlooks and whatever word you want to put on it. But, Lee, if he wasn't reinvigorated, I don't think he'd be at Berkeley Prep 3 days a week. I think that factors into that also.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. What I was about to say about Brees and Brady, and Ira, I want your feedback on this. And I read this maybe a week ago. I can't remember where I read it. But this author, whoever it was, I can't remember. The author suggested the reason why Brady and Brees are going in their 40s and they're still starting, they credited that not so much with, the first thing you think of is their off-season training.
Yes.
The first thing you think of. This guy said, well, that might be a factor, but he thought it was the protection of quarterbacks in the last decade or so. The way the NFL has changed rules about hitting the quarterback, about blocking, things of that nature. So that's why you're seeing quarterbacks play into their 40s now, whereas before that was virtually unheard of.
At the same time, I think we're not giving Brady and Brees enough credit in terms of what they do out there to mitigate against getting knocked on their ass. And by that, I mean going through progressions like a computer, getting that ball out faster than anybody's ever seen, checking down and not being afraid to do it. Breeze doesn't throw the ball 40, 50 yards down the field anymore, very rarely. And he's got the great Michael Thomas, who, well, Buck fans might not want to hear it, but he's unquestionably the best receiver in football. There's a gap between him and the next guy, whether it's Mike Evans, Julio Jones, whoever you want to pick. Michael Thomas is the man, and he proved it. I mean, 150 freaking catches, but they're all 18-yard catches. They're 13-yard catches, keep the chains moving, but I think we got to give Breeze and Brady, and the off-season regimen is definitely a factor here. Diet is a factor. They keep themselves in tremendous shape. Otherwise, they couldn't do what they do, but I do think the rules are helping all quarterbacks, and those two in particular.
Real quick, Ira, you mentioned the Saints. I got to hit you with this. I forgot to discuss this earlier. The wonderful Kay Adams this morning on Good Morning Football, Kay Adams said she cannot jump on the Bucs bandwagon as long as they have a lousy running game. She says she cannot, at this point, she cannot foresee the Bucs overcoming the Saints with their current running situation, unless they have some sort of epiphany and they run the ball better. She said she is no way going to bank on a 43-year-old quarterback having to throw the ball 40 times a game. She said the Bucs must somehow, some way, develop some sort of running game so they don't have to put everything on the back of a 43-year-old quarterback. And she said she doesn't care if it's Brady. She said if you're 43 and he's got to carry your offense, you're not going to do that good.
The obvious reaction to what Lee DeKemper just said.
No, Kay Adams.
But you quoting Kay Adams.
Yeah.
The obvious answer, Steve, is Kay Adams listens to the Ira Kaufman podcast. That's the only answer possible, Steve, because, correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, isn't that exactly what I said in the last week or two when we talked about the importance of a running game for Tom Brady? And my answer was, this is not Tom Brady when he's 29 years old. That was my answer. He's got to have it. And you don't want him having to carry the offense. Bravo, Miss Adams. Bravo. Now, look, I'm not saying they got to average 5.5 yards a carry and lead the league in rushing. But they got to do a lot better than they've been doing, gentlemen. And I don't care what Jason Light or Bruce Arians or Byron Leftwich have to say about it. Run the damn ball better than you've run it for the last 4 years. Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble.
Ira, your podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford. This is your weekend. 0% financing offers. BillCurryFord.com. Start shopping now. Used or pre-owned. Nationwide lifetime warranty. Our good friends and general manager Sean Sullivan. He's one of our good friends too. BillCurryFord.com. Ira, you know, with this running game stuff, we've talked about that on previous podcasts. It's not going to go away until we see some consistency, and I don't know if we're going to see it, but I don't know how much it matters. But let me throw this past you because it sort of ties to it. Gene Deckerhoff, by golly, he was on NFL Network, which was entertaining as hell because Gene doesn't stop talking, and NFL Network, they're a TV station. They deal in hard deadlines. They got to get out. They got to get out. And Gene's fantastic that way, but he was on a roll. And they had some fun with him. And by golly, he said he screwed up. He said, you know, the Bucs last year, they couldn't take the football away. And this year they're going to be a turnover machine. And that secondary is going to become, you know, left and right. The Bucs are going to be making be a turnover central. And they're going to, you know, take a bunch of balls away. And that's going to be the difference. Well, the reality is, Ira, that the Bucs forced 28 turnovers last year.
They did a great job on recovering fumbles. Outstanding.
Where did the Buccaneers rank, Ira? Where did the Buccaneers rank in forcing turnovers last year?
I would say top seven.
Top five. Fifth.
Nice.
How much better are you going to get? I hope a lot of fans aren't counting on some sort of incredible turnover numbers because they sort of got them this year.
Now, Steve, I haven't said that. We've got to acknowledge I believe they only had 12 interceptions. I don't like that number. I like 18 better. So they did a tremendous job of forcing fumbles. Shaq Barrett was tremendous. Of course, JPP is very good at it. Levante David, They get their hands on a lot of balls and knock it loose, but you can't count on that every year, Lee. 12 picks, to me, that's marginal. I think they can 12 picks in 16 games. I'm not impressed with that. I want to see Carlton Davis. I want to see Dean get their hands on more balls. We'll see if Antoine Winfield can help, Lee, in that regard. Whitehead, gentlemen, has one pick in 29 games. Let's not go too crazy about Whitehead as a ball hawk. Steve, your overall point's right. There's nothing wrong with 28 takeaways. Nothing wrong with it. So we don't enjoy nitpicking on G. Dekoff. He's one of our favorite people. But on that one, you've got to do a little more research.
All right, Sage. Lee wrote about how Bruce Arians was part of this quarterback summit. It's in its third year. Doug Williams is really one of the leaders of it. I think he founded it. And this year it was done all online. Arians was a guest speaker and was on a couple of different panels. It was a multi-day conference. Anyway, Arians talked about his hiring philosophy, and he made it very clear. I'll give you the quote. "You don't hire strangers in my office. You hire guys I trust." And that he likes to stick with guys who played for him, guys he knows somehow, or guys he coached with previously. And I got to say, Ira, I totally get it, but I don't like it, especially when you look at Tony Dungy's history of hiring complete strangers to him who turned out to be phenomenal coaches because he was just simply looking for the best.
Well, there are different approaches, you know, and Arians' first 3 years in the desert, guys, he had a lot of success. They made the playoffs the second and third years. They won 10 games, Lee, in his first year. And it didn't end well, I think mostly because they drafted poorly. Steve Keim did not do Arians any favors those last 2 years in Arizona. He had a good coaching staff, and he inherited, you know, a 5-11 team, and he turned them around very quickly. And, you know, he swears by the Todd Bowles of the world. I mean, that's just the way it is. There's different ways to approach it. And Steve's right. I mean, Dungy had coached in the league. He had been a defensive coordinator. He'd been on the Steelers staff. He'd been on the Minnesota staff. He could have tried to hire guys that he was familiar with. But, Steve, let's not forget, he did work with Monty Kiffin, Dungy. And he was the centerpiece of building that Buck defense. So he didn't pluck Monty Kiffin out of the air. You know, and so on that grounds, maybe there's some similarities. But you're right. The Herm Edwards of the world, the Mike Tomlins, Lovey Smith, Marinelli. I don't think those guys had ever worked with Dungy before, but I don't have a problem with the Buck coaching staff. I think it's a good one. And in comparison, Lee, to what came before, I think it's much superior.
Yeah, oddly enough, in my story, I wrote that, you know, 18 months ago, people were thinking, you know, maybe Arians going to keep Todd Monken around, which he didn't. And, now, at the time, I remember Arians saying something along the lines of, you know, I don't want to coach up a coach. And I want guys I'm familiar with. And then, you know, this week at the seminar, he, you know, spelled it out, basically. Like, you know, if you played for me, I'll hire you, but I'm not going to hire you if I don't know you. Like you said, there's different angles each coach has. But, you know, with Dungy, how should I say, I'm not a cheerleader of his. I think he's a great coach.
Right,
I don't think he's a great coach. You and I go round and round around. But the one thing I very much admire about Dungy, maybe his greatest quality, he had an uncanny knack for hiring good assistants. He has unbelievable knack. And I think it was Steve, I think you wrote this one time, that Dungy explained that one reason why he was so good at finding coaches, you know, in a haystack that no one else ever heard of. He apparently would tell scouts of the teams he would coach for, he would, I want you guys to keep an eye out on a young coach you think is doing good. And every once in a while, you know, a scout would call him and say, Tony, you know, I know this guy at, you know, Alcorn State or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And that's exactly how Mike Tomlin came on the radar. A scout tipped off Dungy. He's like, hey, this guy's pretty good, you know.
Yeah. Dungy told the scouts flat out, I need to know who the great teachers are out there, who is just kind of electric and under the radar that you guys really recommend. And that's who he went with.
And Steve, the shame of it is almost all of them were on one side of the football. Almost all of them.
Well, that was a shame for the lost potential championships. But I bring this up not to say I don't like the Bucks coaching staff. That's not it. I'm looking at the totality of it all. I don't like the philosophy, but I get it, like I said. However, if Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles get head coaching gigs after this year, how many friends does Bruce Arians have if they take a couple of buddies off the staff? I mean, where's he going to turn? I'd like a little more diversity in his approach if we get to a point where we lose Leftwich to the Jaguars and somebody hires Todd Bowles. Then what? Who he's going to look at his friends who don't have jobs? I don't know. Well, it seemed strange.
Didn't Steve DeBerg play for him in Kansas City?
DeBerg was there in the late 80s, late 80s under Schottenheimer.
Yeah, and that's when Arians was there.
Yeah.
With Dungy, with Harm Edwards.
Steve, I think you're getting a little ahead of yourself because and every Bucks fan needs to hear the following sentence. If Byron Leftwich or Todd Bowles or both of them get promotions next year in the National Football League, that means the Bucks just won 12 games. So I don't think any Bucks fan is going to be too upset, Steven.
I disagree with you completely, Ira. Completely.
You agree or you disagree?
I disagree completely. Come on now.
Why am I not surprised, the Kemper? Why?
Are you telling me
if the Bucks go 8-8, Todd Bowles is going to get another job as a head coach?
He's not worthy? Is that what you're saying?
If they go 8-8, that's on Todd Bowles. That's going to be partly on Todd Bowles. Now, come on. He's not going to get off scot-free. He just had three terrible seasons in New York. You don't overlook that.
I wouldn't hire the guy. I'm just saying, if they have some changes and Bowles leaves and brings, for however it shakes out, Ira, if one of these guys leaves and takes some people from Arian's staff, it creates an interesting situation. I don't know. I wonder.
Well, you're worried that Arians is running out of people that he's familiar with. That's what you're worried.
You're telling me I'm getting ahead of myself. It's the end of June. What am I supposed to do? Talk about last September?
Lee, will somebody please tell the host of this beautiful podcast that Leftwich is not getting a head coaching job if the Bucks go 8-8? I don't care how they go 8-8, but that ain't happening. Somebody tell him that, Lee.
Well, I have a question for you, Ira. Barring the Bucks completely collapsing this year, I think we could all agree that Arians coming back next year, and that might be it. But do you think? Remember, he negotiated with the Bucks for some time before the announcement was made. Hey, Bruce Arians is coming. You think it's possible that Todd Bowles or Goodwin or maybe even Leftwich has already been guaranteed as a successor to Arians? Coach in waiting, but, you know, they haven't announced that was part of the package deal to bring Arians out of retirement?
I don't think so. I don't think the Glazers would do it because they would have had to have done it without ever seeing Bowles or Leftwich up close. You know, they had they got to take Arians' word for it, and they saw Bowles with the Jets, but you got to see them up close and how they operate and get reports from people that you trust within the organization about how they do their jobs. So I don't think the Glazers would have done that heading into the 2019 season. I don't think that was something that Arians had to have in advance for him to take the job. No, I don't think so.
Before we head out of here, we want to thank, of course, all of our listeners who continue to listen to the podcast year-round, two episodes a week. You never know when a bonus episode is coming. It's all presented by Bill Curry Ford, and we thank our friends at Big Storm Beer, and of course, Florida's Elite Restoration and Sage Look. The Hall of Fame just canceled the whole shebang for this year. No enshrinement in August. They're kicking it all to 2021, and they canceled the Hall of Fame game. I mean, you know the guys intimately there at the Hall of Fame. This is a big deal, Ira, and I know that they're touting it as, you know, extra fun in 21 or whatever they're calling it, but this is a huge and sad situation.
They didn't want to do it, Steve. They didn't want to do it. I'm afraid, and I'm afraid of the message that it sends, is that, look, this is a big moneymaker for the Hall of Fame. They get some money from the NFL, but David Baker has told the selectors many times they only get 5% of their operating budget from the National Football League. 5%. The rest are sponsorships, you know, people coming to the museum. And the centerpiece is Enshrinement Weekend. I mean, it's a huge deal. I've been up there 3 or 4 times. I went up for Sapp. I went up for Brooks. I went up for Dungy. It's huge. I mean, it's a whole week-long festival. And, of course, the weekend itself, it's a big, big moneymaker. So they don't take this move lightly. Guys, you know, this year was the centennial class. I mean, there were 10 senior guys that were going to get in. This was a very unusual class. It was much bigger than a normal class. Then you got the 5 modern-era guys, the Atwaters of the world, and the Edgerrin Jameses and the Isaac Bruces and Hutchinson. And now that's going to be all put off. And then you're going to have the class that we're going to elect, hopefully, in Tampa in 2021. That includes John Lynch, if these guys have any a shred of sense to them. And then, you know, you're going to have to enshrine those people, theoretically, in the summer of 2021. Lee, you know, these guys, they're supposed to take 12 minutes with a speech. They like to take 35 minutes, Lee. I mean, we could be there day and night for these speeches next year. But you know what? I think the 3 of us would stay up just to hear what John Lynch has to say. And you know my feelings about the Lynch candidacy, not to mention the fact that I haven't even been able to make a speech for Rondé Barber or Simeon Rice or even a Mike Allstott, you know, or in that regard. So there's more bucks to put in, and let's hope Lynch is part of the class of 2021.
All right, Ira, we got plenty on tap for next week's podcast. Everybody keep listening to Ira, following him on Twitter at iKaufman76. He's going to try to tweet more, but he's very busy with his picking up poop and urine on his carpets and all the stuff he does.
Oh, the carpets are looking sweet. Absolutely sweet. We got the gates up. That dog ain't getting near this living room. And by the way, Steve, I think it's worth mentioning, I sent you guys a nice picture of me today at the Bill Curry showroom. Did I not, Steven?
Yeah, we're going to get that out on Twitter. Thankfully, you didn't have any mustard on your chin, so that's always a bonus. We're out of here. You stay safe. You wear your mask. Lee, you got a final word for Ira. Send us out of here.
I had a question for him, but
go for
it. Ira's got a... All right, Ira, this kind of troubles me, but this might be in your wheelhouse. Tua down in Miami, you know, like the model capital of the Western Hemisphere. He went out on social media and confessed he's got a mad crush on 54-year-old Shania Twain. Your thoughts, Ira?
Who has this crush, Lee? Who?
Tua.
Oh, boy. I'm a little speechless right now. I think I'd better have another Brimosa, Steve, to get my thoughts together. I'm out of here, gentlemen.
All right, Ira. Next week you can tell us about your crush on Betty White. We'll see you.